This afternoon, I thought I would take the opportunity to do some sutta readings about loving kindness. I've rambled on long enough. give people the real scoop. Yeah. Because oftentimes, there's some sutta readings I came across that are they're kind of interesting in that they're not so, I think, so familiar to people, or it's taking something familiar and casting it in a new light, and then there's some that are daily life applications of loving kindness. The first one I thought I would read is one I had mentioned. It's an occasion when the Buddha goes to visit three monks, one of them the Venerable Anuruddha, who was a very accomplished monk, also the Buddha's cousin, and they are and the Buddha is coming from a situation, I mean that's not in the sutta, the Buddha is coming from a situation where he had the community was in disharmony. And was actually there was a schism happening in the sangha, the Buddha tried to intervene and they sort of well, let the Blessed One live at peace. We'll sort this out, you know, so, which means we're gonna go at it tooth and nail. Please don't get in our way. So he gave up on them and went off on his own. And he came across these three monks who were living out in a woodland area. And it's a various introduction. And then the Buddha sits down. They pay respects to him, and then he asks, "I hope you're all keeping well. I hope you're all comfortable. I hope you're not having any trouble getting alms food." That's a stock phrase. "We're keeping well, Blessed One. We're comfortable, and we're not having any trouble getting alms food. I hope, Anuruddha, that you're all living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." "Surely, Venerable Sir, we are living in concord, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." "But, Anuruddha, how do you live thus?" "Venerable Sir, as to that, I think thus. It is a gain for me, it is a great gain for me, that I am living with such companions in the holy life. I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness toward those venerable ones, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do? Then I set aside what I wish to do and do what these venerable ones wish to do. We are different in body, Venerable Sir, but one in mind." The Venerable Nandi and the Venerable Kampila, the other two monks, each spoke likewise, adding, "That is how, Venerable Sir, we are living in concord, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." So that's a delightful description of what's possible in the human realm.
Yeah.
There's another discourse where the Buddha, this is actually when he's trying to convince the monks in Kosambi, which are the monks who were disputing and were creating conflict. He admonishes them, and then he gives sort of outlines what would be a more appropriate or skillful way to actually live together. He said, "Misguided men, what can you possibly know? What can you see that you take to quarreling and brawling and are deep in disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers? That you can neither convince each other nor be convinced by others? That you can neither persuade each other nor be persuaded by others? Misguided men, that would lead to your harm and suffering for a long time." Then the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus thus: "Bhikkhus, there are these six memorable qualities that create love and respect and conduce to helpfulness, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. What are the six?" Here, and of course this is instruction to monks, but it goes across the board. Here a bhikkhu maintains bodily acts of loving kindness, both in public and in private, towards his companions in the holy life. This is a memorable quality that creates love and respect and conduces to helpfulness, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. Again, a bhikkhu maintains verbal acts of loving kindness, both in public and in private, towards his companions in the holy life. This is a memorable quality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a bhikkhu maintains mental acts of loving kindness, both in public and in private, towards his companions in the holy life. This is a memorable quality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a bhikkhu uses things in common with his virtuous companions in the holy life without making reservations. He shares with them any gain of a kind that accords with the Dhamma and has been obtained in a way that accords with the Dhamma, including even the contents of his alms bowl. This is a memorable quality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a bhikkhu dwells both in public and in private, possessing in common with his companions in the holy life those virtues that are unbroken, untorn, unblotched, unmottled, liberating, commended by the wise, not misapprehended, and conducive to concentration. This too is a memorable quality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a bhikkhu dwells in public and in private, possessing in common with his companions in the holy life that view that is noble and emancipating, and leads one who practices in accordance with it to the complete destruction of suffering. This too is a memorable quality that creates love and respect and conduces to helpfulness, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. So those are they come up in the suttas in different places, and they're called the six qualities that create concord, six qualities for sort of living together, and that loving kindness in act, speech, in thought, that sharing with generosity, the common virtue, also that's a stock phrase in the virtues that are unbroken, untorn, unblotched, unmottled, liberating, commended by the wise, not misapprehended, and conducive to concentration. Those are also when it's talked about the virtue that is possessed by one who enters the stream of Dhamma, who's a stream enterer, somebody who has, and that is a distinguishing characteristic of the one who is a stream enterer. It's interesting that how the Buddha most often describes somebody who is a stream enterer is not their sort of dazzling meditations or their astute wisdom, but it's faith in Buddha Dhamma Sangha and well-established virtue. Those are the qualities. It's really, and then the virtue is, in this sense, not misapprehended. Is also not clung to, is not grasped at, not attached to, so that it's a commended by the wise and conducive to concentration. So that it's the virtue that is settling, is there's a composure and that is a function of. Say a virtue is not just kind of keeping you in line, but it's allowing the mind to be established in a quality of non-remorse and well-being, so that it's easily concentrated. It's a factor of our development of meditation. So that first sutta was that's in the middle length discourses. That was in 31. The second one was in the sutta number 48. And this next sutta reading will become from sutta number 21. And it's a very famous sutta. It's the simile of the saw, but there's a build up to it. And one is the incident that arose to the teaching is that. One of the bhikkhus was in conflict with the other bhikkhus, and he was not taking admonishment very well. The circumstance came to the Buddha, so he called that monk there, gave some teachings, but then took the occasion to teach all of the monks, which is oftentimes what happens, not just in the Buddha's time. And you see it over and over again. I do it all the time. Get a circumstance comes up, and it's a great occasion to use it for an example of application of Dhamma within the community. Because so too bhikkhus. Some bhikkhu is extremely kind, extremely gentle, extremely peaceful, so long as disagreeable courses of speech do not touch him. But it is when disagreeable courses of speech touch him that it can be understood whether that bhikkhu is really kind, gentle, and peaceful. I do not call a bhikkhu easy to admonish, who is easy to admonish and makes himself easy to admonish only for the sake of getting robes, alms food, a resting place, and medicinal requisites. Why is that? Because that bhikkhu is not easy to admonish, nor makes himself easy to admonish when he gets no robes, alms food, resting place, and medicinal requisites. But when a bhikkhu is easy to admonish and makes himself easy to admonish because he honors, respects, and reveres the Dhamma, him I call easy to admonish. Therefore, bhikkhus, you should train thus. We shall be easy to admonish and make ourselves easy to admonish because we honor, respect, and revere the Dhamma. That is how you should train bhikkhus. Bhikkhus, there are these five courses of speech that others may use when they address you. Their speech may be timely or untimely, true or untrue, gentle or harsh, connected with good or with harm, spoken with a mind of loving kindness or with inner hate. When others address you, their speech may be timely or untimely. When others address you, their speech may be true or untrue. When others address you, their speech may be gentle or harsh. When others address you, their speech may be connected with good or with harm. When others address you, their speech may be spoken with a mind of loving kindness or with inner hate. Herein, bhikkhus, you should train thus. Our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. We shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And, starting with him, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train, bhikkhus. Bhikkhus, suppose a man came with a hoe and a basket and said, I shall make this great earth to be without earth. He would dig here and there, strew the soil here and there, spit here and there, and urinate here and there, saying, be without earth, be without earth. What do you think, bhikkhus? Could that man make this great earth to be without earth? No, venerable sir. Why is that? Because this great earth is deep and immense. It cannot possibly be made to be without earth. Eventually the man would reap only weariness and disappointment. So too, bhikkhus, there are these five courses of speech. Herein, bhikkhus, you should, and it goes through, it's repeated, you should train thus, our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind similar to the earth, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train, bhikkhus. Bhikkhus, suppose a man came with crimson, turmeric, indigo, or carmine and said, I shall draw pictures and make pictures appear on empty space. What do you think, bhikkhus? Could that man draw pictures and make pictures appear on empty space? No, venerable sir. Why is that? Because empty space is formless and invisible. He cannot possibly draw pictures there or make pictures appear there. Eventually the man would reap only weariness and disappointment. So too, bhikkhus, there are these five courses of speech. Herein, bhikkhus, you should train thus. Our minds will remain unaffected. We shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind similar to empty space, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train, bhikkhus. Bhikkhus, suppose a man came with a blazing grass torch and said, I shall heat up and burn away the river Ganges with this blazing grass torch. What do you think, bhikkhus? Could that man heat up and burn away the river Ganges with that blazing grass torch? No, venerable sir. Why is that? Because the river Ganges is deep and immense. It cannot possibly be heated up and burned away with a blazing grass torch. Eventually, the man would reap only weariness and disappointment. So too, bhikkhus, there are these five courses of speech. Herein, bhikkhus, you should train thus. Our minds will remain unaffected. And we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind similar to the river Ganges, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train, bhikkhus. Bhikkhus, suppose there were a catskin bag that was rubbed, well rubbed, thoroughly well rubbed, soft, silky, rid of rustling, rid of crackling. And a man came with a stick or a potsherd and said, There is this catskin bag that is rubbed, well rubbed, rid of rustling, rid of crackling. I shall make it rustle and crackle. What do you think, bhikkhus? Could that man make it rustle or crackle with the stick or the potsherd? No, venerable sir. Why is that? Because that catskin bag being rubbed and well rubbed, rid of rustling, rid of crackling, cannot possibly be made to rustle or crackle with the stick or the potsherd. Eventually the man would reap only weariness and disappointment. So too, bhikkhus, there are these five courses of speech that others may use when they address you. Their speech may be timely or untimely, true or untrue, gentle or harsh, connected with good or with harm, spoken with a mind of loving kindness or with inner hate. When others address you, their speech may be timely or untimely. When others address you, their speech may be true or untrue. When others address you, their speech may be gentle or harsh. When others address you, their speech may be connected with good or with harm. When others address you, their speech may be spoken with a mind of loving kindness or with inner hate. Herein, bhikkhus, you should train thus. Our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare, with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. We shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness, and starting with him, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind similar to a catskin bag, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train, bhikkhus. Bhikkhus, even if bandits were to sever you savagely limb by limb with a two-handled saw, he who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out my teaching. Herein, bhikkhus, you should train thus. Our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare, with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. We shall abide pervading them with a mind imbued with loving kindness, and starting with them, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train, bhikkhus. Bhikkhus, if you keep this advice on the simile of the saw constantly in mind, do you see any course of speech, trivial or gross, that you could not endure? No, venerable sir. Therefore, bhikkhus, you should keep this advice on the simile of the saw constantly in mind. That will lead to your welfare and happiness for a long time. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Sets the bar pretty high, doesn't it? But in the you think, how is that possible? In the sense of somebody who is, you know, sort of attacking one, that we're not giving rise to any kind of anger or ill will, and from looking at it, stepping back and looking at it from a perspective of, say, that abundant heart of loving kindness, one recognizes that, and with a conviction in the Dhamma, that all beings are the owners of their actions, heirs to their actions, born of their actions, related to their actions, and that those causes will result in rebirth in a particular way, so that the result of anger, ill will, any kind of violence, that results in an unfortunate rebirth, whereas being able to be well established in loving kindness is exactly it's a cause that produces a result exceedingly fortunate circumstances. I'd say it's worth in the long run, it's worth being able to establish training oneself so that one doesn't. The option is not just sort of aversion, ill will, irritation. So those were some suttas in kind of application of loving kindness in day-to-day life. There's also an interesting discourse where the application of loving kindness as a basis for insight, and that's the sutta number 52 in the Majjhima Nikaya. And it's a discourse by Ananda, and Ananda actually gives a variety of bases for insight, the four jhanas, the four Brahma Viharas, and then the three formless attainments. But I'll just mention the how he describes the loving kindness. Again, a bhikkhu abides pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he abides pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. He considers this and understands it thus. This deliverance of mind, this deliverance of mind through loving kindness is conditioned and volitionally produced. But whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. Standing upon that, he attains the destruction of the taints, or the asavas, or outflows. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, then because of that desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. This is one thing proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, wherein, if a bhikkhu abides diligent, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind comes to be liberated, his undestroyed taints come to be destroyed, and he attains the supreme security from bondage that he had not attained before. As say, something as sublime as loving kindness, it's still impermanent. That still can be a basis for reflection, investigation, seeing its changing nature. I'll do a few readings from the numerical discourses, the Anguttara Nikaya, and this is from the Anguttara 1's 6th section, and again, this is to monks, but it applies to everybody. Monks, if for just the time of a finger snap, a monk produces a thought of loving kindness, develops it, gives attention to it, such a one is rightly called a monk. Not in vain does he meditate. He acts in accordance with the master's teachings. He follows his advice and eats deservingly the country's alms food. How much more so if he cultivates it? So, what we've been doing is not to be sniffed at. The next sutta is one that probably everybody knows. It's the Kalama Sutta. But the it's rarely, well, almost never, when the Kalama Sutta is mentioned, that loving kindness gets any billing in it. So that I thought I would read the complete discourse on that. Thank you. And this is Anguttara 3, Sutta number 65. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was wandering on tour together with a large sangha of monks when he arrived at a town of the Kalamas named Kesaputta. Now the Kalamas of Kesaputta heard. It is said that the ascetic Gotama, the Sakyan son who went forth from the Sakyan family, has arrived at Kesaputta. Now a good report about that master Gotama has been circulating thus. That Blessed One is an Arahant, fully enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of the worlds, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One. He makes known this world with its devas, with Mara, with Brahma, this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, with its devas and humans, having realized it through his own direct knowledge. He teaches a Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and expression. He reveals a holy life that is perfectly complete and purified. Now it is good to see such arahants such as this. Then the Kalamas of Kesaputta approached the Blessed One. Some paid homage to him and sat down to one side. Some exchanged greetings with him, and after the greetings and cordial talk, sat down to one side. Some saluted him reverentially and sat down to one side. Some remained silent and sat down to one side. Then the Kalamas said to the Blessed One, "There are, Lord, some ascetics and Brahmins who come to Kesaputta. They explain and elucidate their own doctrines, but disparage, debunk, revile, and vilify the doctrines of others. But then some other ascetics and Brahmins come to Kesaputta, and they too explain and elucidate their own doctrines, but disparage, debunk, revile, and vilify the doctrines of the others. For us, Lord, there is perplexity and doubt as to which of these good ascetics speak truth and which speak falsehood. It is fitting for you to be perplexed, O Kalamas. It is fitting for you to be in doubt. Doubt has arisen in you about a perplexing matter. Come, Kalamas, do not go by oral tradition, by lineage of teaching, by hearsay, by a collection of scriptures, by logical reasoning, by inferential reasoning, by reflection on reasons, by the acceptance of a view after pondering it, by the seeming competence of a speaker, or because you think the ascetic is our teacher. But when you know for yourselves, these teachings are unwholesome, these teachings are blamable, these things are censured by the wise, these things, if undertaken and practiced, lead to harm and suffering, then you should abandon them. What do you think, Kalamas? When greed, hatred, and delusion arise in a person, is it for his welfare or harm? For his harm, Lord. Kalamas, a person who is greedy, hating, and deluded, overpowered by greed, hatred, and delusion, his thoughts controlled by them, will destroy life, take what is not given, engage in sexual misconduct, and tell lies. He will also prompt others to do likewise. Will that conduce to his harm and suffering for a long time? Yes, Lord. What do you think, Kalamas? Are these things wholesome or unwholesome? Unwholesome, Lord. Blamable or blameless? Blamable, Lord. Censured or praised by the wise? Censured, Lord. Undertaken and practiced, do they lead to harm and suffering or not? Or how is it in this case? Undertaken and practiced, these things lead to harm and suffering. So it appears to us in this case. It was for this reason, Kalamas, that we said, do not go by oral tradition, and so on. Come, Kalamas. Do not go by oral tradition, by lineage of teaching, by hearsay, by a collection of scriptures, by logical reasoning, by inferential reasoning, by reflection on reasons, by the acceptance of a view after pondering it, by the seeming competence of a speaker, or because you think the ascetic is our teacher. But when you know for yourselves, these things are wholesome, these things are blameless, these things are praised by the wise, these things, if undertaken and practiced, lead to welfare and happiness, then you should engage in them. What do you think, Kalamas? When non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion arise in a person, is it for his welfare or harm? For his welfare, Lord. Kalamas, a person who is without greed, without hatred, without delusion, not overpowered by greed, hatred, and delusion, his thoughts not controlled by them, will abstain from the destruction of life, from taking what is not given, from sexual misconduct, and from false speech. He will also prompt others to do likewise. Will that conduce to his welfare and happiness for a long time? Yes, Lord. What do you think, Kalamas? Are these things wholesome or unwholesome? Wholesome, Lord. Blamable or blameless? Blameless, Lord. Censured or praised by the wise? Praised, Lord. Undertaken and practiced, do they lead to welfare and happiness or not? Or how is it in this case? Undertaken and practiced, these things lead to welfare and happiness. So it appears to us in this case. It was for this reason, Kalamas, that we said, do not go upon oral tradition, and so on. Then, Kalamas, that noble disciple, devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness, likewise the second, the third, and the fourth. Thus above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility and without ill will. He dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion, with altruistic joy, with equanimity. Likewise the second quarter, the third, and the fourth. Thus above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with equanimity, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility and without ill will. When, Kalamas, this noble disciple has thus made his mind free of enmity, free of ill will, uncorrupted and pure, he has won four assurances in this very life. The first assurance he has won is this: if there is another world, and if good and bad deeds bear fruit and yield results, it is possible that with the breakup of the body after death, I shall arise in a good destination, in a heavenly world. The second assurance he has won is this: if there is no other world, and if good and bad deeds do not bear fruit and yield results, still right here, in this very life, I live happily, free of enmity and ill will. The third assurance he has won is this: suppose evil befalls the evildoer, that is, suppose karma yields results, then, as I do not intend evil for anyone, how can suffering afflict me, one who does no evil deed? The fourth assurance he has won is this: suppose evil does not befall the evildoer, then, right here, I see myself purified in both respects. When, Kalamas, this noble disciple has thus made his mind free of enmity, free of ill will, uncorrupted and pure, he has won these four assurances in this very life. So it is, Blessed One, so it is, Sublime One, when this noble disciple has thus made his mind free of enmity, free of ill will, uncorrupted and pure, he has won these four assurances in this very life. Excellent, Lord. Let the Blessed One accept us as lay followers who have gone for refuge from today until life's end. I'd say interesting how the Buddha, and again, it's something where it's often quoted as the charter of being able to how to make up one's mind. But then, because the Buddha takes it a step further and really lays that foundation really strong. This last one that I, well, this last sutta, there's a short one that I'll read, is, it might sound a bit obscure as I read it, but basically what it's concerning is that the, say, the result of karma is that one of the ways, even and this is based on, say, scriptural teaching, is that one of the traditional ways of dealing with a perception of receiving the fruits of bad karma, dealing with some sort of karmic obstruction, obstacle, difficulty, is the commitment to the skillful karma, good karma, really sort of building up the bank account of good karma, this is a sutta that sort of gives a perspective on that, and that certainly encouraging that. Okay, I declare, monks, that actions willed, performed, and accumulate will not become extinct as long as their results have not been experienced, be it in this life, in the next life, or in subsequent future lives. And as long as these results of actions willed, performed, and accumulated have not been experienced, there will be no making an end of suffering. But a noble disciple, devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unconfused, clearly comprehending, ever mindful, dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise the second quarter, the third, and the fourth. Thus above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility and without ill will. He knows, formerly my mind was narrow and undeveloped, but now my mind is measureless and well-developed. No measurable karma will remain in it, none will persist there. What do you think, monks? Maybe I'll read the... What is being referred to, as I say, where no measurable karma will remain in it, is that none will persist there. Is that the with the cultivation of the liberation of mind by loving kindness, the karmic potential of that attainment will take precedence over any other karma. Sense for your karma, and will, and it'll generate rebirth and bring results in a. So it's like the, it has, it's more, it's actually like in the there's something. I mean, it's actually called like heavy karma, and that karma that is irreversible. That has what takes precedence in terms of, say, unskillful karma, taking the life of parents, killing an arahant. These are things. These are called heavy karma. But there's also, it's not just on the unskillful side, but on the skillful side. Heavy karma is like attainment of jhanas, attainment of the liberations of mind by the Brahma Viharas. These are heavy karma. they take precedence. Stream entry, the the entering of the paths and fruits. Those are heavy karma. Because it takes precedence over other forms of karma. What do you think, monks, if a young man from his boyhood onwards were to develop the liberation of mind by loving kindness, would he then do an evil deed? He would not, Lord. And not doing any evil deed, will suffering afflict him? It will not, Lord. How could suffering afflict one who does no evil deeds? Indeed, monks, the liberation of mind by loving kindness should be developed by a man or a woman. A man or a woman cannot take their body with them and depart. Mortals have consciousness as the connecting link. But the noble disciple knows, whatever evil deeds I did before with this physical body, their results will be experienced here, and they will not follow me along. Loving kindness, if developed in such a way, will lead to the state of non-returning. In the case of a monk who is established in the wisdom found here in this teaching, but who has not penetrated to a higher liberation. So just the recognition of the power, strength of the cultivation of loving kindness as the ability to undermine other tendencies within the karmic potential. And this last sutta that I'll read is from that one was from Anguttara 10's number 208. The next one is Anguttara 11's sutta number 16. If, O monks, the liberation of the mind by loving kindness is developed and cultivated, frequently practiced, made one's vehicle and foundation, firmly established, consolidated, and properly undertaken, 11 blessings may be expected. What 11? One sleeps peacefully. One sees no bad dreams. One is dear to human beings. One is dear to non-human beings. One will be protected by devas. Fire, poison, and weapons cannot injure one. One's mind becomes easily concentrated. One's facial complexion will be serene. One will die unconfused. And if one does not penetrate higher, one will be reborn in the Brahma world. That if one does not penetrate higher, if one doesn't realize as a state of liberation. Those are all good things. I don't see anything that's a drawback in that at all. So these... Again, just thinking that when I'd like to plant the seeds of people's interest and try to encourage people to go back to the sources. The Buddha is the root, and just to be able to. Because sometimes the language is a bit daunting, or sometimes the repetition is boring, and it's true. beside that, there's this extraordinary treasure trove of teachings and a real liberating insight and an ability to. There's this tremendous ability to see things clearly and explain it. And that it's really rare in the world. And certainly rarer in the world of religious teachings. It's a great blessing, so being able to tap into those the teachings that we've, through good fortune, have inherited. And you also see that there's some things that are, there is a certain repetitiveness there. That I will abide pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. There's tremendous encouragement to be doing that, and so that we can take this next period and sit and bringing those thoughts of loving kindness to mind, really reminding oneself of the various formulations, whatever sort of resonated, and allow attention to be, I'd say, one of the words that's used to describe the Brahmaviharas, and these when one is accomplished in these meditations is immeasurable. It's that sense of the heart is not bound by constricted, contracted, small-mindedness, just allowing it to be, setting that aside and allowing the heart to shine forth in that which is beautiful. There's a in the teachings there's a it's called liberations, vimokha, and one of the vimokas is liberations, emancipations. So they're called the through liberation through the beautiful, and that can be both a meditative attainment in terms of, say, color, like the casinas where they're exceedingly beautiful. But also, I think a state of mind that is like loving kindness is a beautiful mind state, and that allows the mind to the heart to really drop its self-concern, its worries, its fears and anxieties, it's comparing, and just being able to set that all aside and dwell in that which is truly beautiful. And it's not really about me being anything, getting anything. And that's the beauty of it, and being able to put it all aside and dwell in that wish of loving kindness to be expanding, abundant, immeasurable. So we can take this time to cultivate some of these qualities.